The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
I was only a worker in the cause of the restoration of our own language. And this time, I speak with the title, President of Ireland.
Tá súlagam, go bhéta mís mór áni anam, con an tír, the cor en a lát.
Were it not for the spirit of our people in the subsequent years, the uprising of 1916 might not have been at all of importance.
I suppose politics to me is rather like gardening. I'm very fond of gardening. When you're a politician, you have a garden to cultivate.
Mr. O'Dowla's move clearly puts the government in the most embarrassing possible position, signalling as it does his unhappiness with their handling of the controversy which blew up following the remarks by the Minister for Defence, Mr. Donegan, that he was a thundering disgrace.
Is mór an tábhar áthais dom féin agus dom bhean céile é, iarracht sin sean caide a fhéiceáil ar an gcomhlúdar céimiúil seo.
Mná na héireann agus fir na héireann. The Ireland I will be representing is a new Ireland, open, tolerant, inclusive.
This visit is a culmination of the success of the peace process. It is an acknowledgement that while we, none of us, can change the past, we have chosen to change the future.
Thus, the final occasion when I will be wishing you the very best in your hopes and lives at home and abroad as President of Ireland.
And nine so far from Douglas Hyde, Sean T. O'Kelly, De Valera himself, Erskine Childress, Carola Dawley, Paddy Hillary, Mary Robinson, Mary McLeese, Michael D. Higgins. But who will be our 10th president? Over the next 3 months, we're going to hear pitches from candidates as to why they believe they should be the next Uachtaráin na hÉireann. But when it comes to those pitches, what can a president of Ireland actually achieve? What is the power which is ascribed to the president? The majority of these powers are conferred on the office by Bunreacht na hÉireann, our constitution, so we're going to take a deep dive into what the limits of presidential power are in Ireland, and to do so we're joined by Sean Rainford, PhD student in constitutional law at DCU, and by Dr. Jennifer Kavanagh, law lecturer at the South East Technological University and author of the book Constitutional Law in Ireland. Good morning and welcome to you both. Now, Jennifer, we'll start with you in terms of what the constitution actually says.
So obviously constitutions are by their very, very nature thin documents which sketches out the bones. So if anyone plays bridge, you'll know the bones of bridge, and it's the protocol then that puts on some of the flesh onto that. So what's in the constitution is that they are the first citizen of Ireland, that they have a role with all the different branches of government. So say, for example, with the legislature, the Dáil, the Seanad, they sign off on legislation. They don't, it's not a case that they can turn around and say, I don't like this, I'm not going to sign it. That would be not doing their job. But if there is a constitutional issue, they can send it under Article 26 to the Supreme Court for a mock trial of the constitutionality. There is also another provision under Article 27, which we've never used in the state, that if a large enough number of members of the Dáil and the Seanad feel there's a major issue, then the president can actually dissolve the government and have an election based on that, or send it as an ordinary referendum. We've never had an ordinary referendum. They give the seals of office to the executive, being the cabinet. Apparently, there's always issues when the ministers receive these seals. They're running off with them to their car and they're chasing them down saying, no, they got to stay here. And then when it comes to the judiciary, they are the ones that have the formal role in the appointment of the judiciary.
There's Is it fair to paraphrase it, though, saying they can only do all of these things under the direction of the government?
That is correct, or with checking with the Council of State. But there is one power that they have, which has actually never been used. But say, for example, if in the morning the coalition falls apart and the president, being the weather vane of the state, says, nobody here really wants another election. Will you go off and have a chat with the other lads there and see if you can sort something out, because I'm not going to dissolve Parliament until you guys do that. So there is that independent power there for them to do that, and that's important. But as we have seen with other countries that do, in fairness, operate a more presidential system of government like France and America, we just need to look at America to see what would happen if a president had too much power. So it's a decision of the state. Have we reached the correct balance? We can change that by referendum if we want to do so. But considering they are so connected with the three key branches of state, that you really don't want them to have too much power either.
OK, now we'll talk about what presidents can say in a moment. First of all, with Sean. But the last thing from the Constitution I want to explore with you is, because we hear about it in the United States all the time, can we impeach our president?
Absolutely. And we have a very similar system. Bear in mind, our Constitution was not the first Constitution on the block. There was the French and the American. A lot of our Constitution was actually based on the Weimar Constitution. So we have in a system whereby one house can lay a charge, the other house will investigate. The last time that came up as a side issue, to be honest, it wasn't the core issue, was Michael D. Higgins has had a habit of pushing the boundaries. And there was one or two people saying, oh, we need to impeach him. Was never going to be an active issue. But if a president was to fail in their duties, they're not answerable in their normal role to the Oireachtas. So say, for example, when there was a query over the accounts and the spending in the Oireachtas, it was actually the Secretary General of the Department of an Taoiseach who was the one before the Public Accounts Committee, because they give the money to the Oireachtas. It wasn't the president themselves, because they are not answerable to the Oireachtas unless you're in an impeachment situation, because then natural justice, they would have to be heard, they would have to give evidence, and that's the only time that you're going to get a serious issue with the president in Leinster House fighting for their political life.
Is there any description in the Constitution as to what might be an impeachable offence?
No, and there's a very good reason for that, because when you define things in law, you will end up accidentally excluding things. So what the Constitution says is stated misbehaviour. So stated misbehaviour simply means you have to say what the charge is. It's not, oops, we should have written that into the Constitution.
Okay.
They leave it broad because something that might have gotten the president in trouble at the foundation of the office, say writing a telegram, obviously would not be an issue nowadays. You'd need a referendum to change it to an email.
Yeah, gotcha. So if there was some reprehensible behaviour, potentially criminal behaviour and so on, that would be, would the president be susceptible to normal law in that regard, or would the impeachment process be the process for
yes.
the president?
And we can look to France for an example of that. So, for example, one or two French presidents have been in a spot of criminal law bother, but they couldn't do anything when they were in the office. And that was to protect the reputation of the office. It was a case of get rid of him and then we'll deal with him.
OK, so if the president is impeached then by one chamber, by the Senate, for example, then the case would be heard by the Dáil and vice versa.
Absolutely correct. Yes.
Yeah. OK, now, Sean, the question of what the president says, because if there was any president who caused a bit of a stir throughout his now 14 years in office, it would be Michael D. Mary Robinson ruffled feathers, I know, by going outside the normal acceptant thing was, if the president's going to say anything, they've got to run it past the government. And she took a different interpretation, after all, a very eminent lawyer.
She did. So Article 13.7 actually is fairly explicit, and it says that every address that the president makes to the Oireachtas or a message to the nation must have received the approval of the government. So traditionally,
and that's
there,
it.
Well, traditionally, there was a broad definition of that, and then there was also a narrow interpretation. There was a broad interpretation of that from, let's say, the beginning of the presidency until Mary Robinson, which was that basically any public message that you have, any speech that you give to, like, the opening of, you know, a new facility, or any speech, any political speech, or any you know, any kind of public statement, you'd have to get the prior approval of the government. After Mary Robinson's election, I think it was in 1993, there was a bit of a disagreement between the Department of the Taoiseach under Charles Haughey and Mary Robinson, and she insisted that basically this is actually much more limited than you think. If it's a message to the nation or an address to the Oireachtas, yes, obviously there has to be prior approval. But if it's just any random statement that I'm making or a speech, I shouldn't need to get.
But if she was invited, for example, to address the United Nations,
yes, she would have to. Yeah, in that case, she probably would have to. But so since then, basically, since Mary Robinson and including Mary McAleese and obviously President Higgins, there has been much more. There has been much more of a tendency to speak about political issues, speak about issues which there are differences of opinion.
I mean, Palestine would be the classic example with President Michael D. Higgins and anti-Semitism.
And there's other ones as well. There's a huge range of them. But each president since Mary Robinson has gotten into the fray of political debate in some sense, one way or another.
But I mean, there's party political debate and there's political debate.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And party political debate, I think, would be a no-no.
There are differences of opinion on this issue, and it's not clear cut. Myself and my colleague Jamie McLaughlin, we wrote an article in a law journal a few months ago, and we basically argued that that isn't as clear cut, and actually there isn't as many limits on like partisan political speech as we might have assumed, because of the structural nature of the presidency, because of the fact that, importantly, I guess the president is insulated, it's distinct from the executive branch, and that actually makes the president slightly unusual compared to other comparators in other countries. The fact that the president is directly elected, that also probably gives him or her more of a political mandate to speak about things. Obviously, there are a huge number of things that actually limit what the president can do.
But if the president, for example, was by popular acclaim and perhaps the full depth of their political views might not be known to the electorate when they nominated that person and then elected that person to the office, if they turned out to be a hard right person with views on immigration and they started to make random speeches at the opening of some facility in County Offaly about immigration, you'd imagine that would cause a stir.
It certainly would cause a stir, but whether it would be unconstitutional is
well, let's go to the expert on this, Jennifer. Jennifer, what say you about what the president is properly allowed to say and is prohibited by the Constitution from saying, rather than what has developed through custom and practice?
Well, Sean is completely correct in what he's saying, that there isn't really a hard limit. And when you look at some of the speeches of Michael D. Higgins, like when he called homelessness a national crisis, you could argue, depending on your viewpoint, that that is actually party political. And the core thing is that while the president is, to a certain extent, in a very well-pampered, gilded cage as the representative of Ireland, they are still a citizen. And they don't, as part of signing their declaration of office, they don't sign another document saying, oh, I'll have a golden gag put on me, so I will say nothing and think nothing unless it is what the government wants me to think. They are still a human being with their rights at the end of the day. But as Sean has said, there is no hard limits. And Sean did a very good article with Jamie on this in the Journal, for anyone who wants to look at it, that all the presidents that have come in have put their own shape on it. So all the presidents prior to Mary Robinson have been grandees of party politics. That's when the Oireachtas was viewed as a lovely retirement home for politicians who would serve the state well. But you have people like Mary Robinson, like Mary McAleese, who themselves have said things. And I remember Mary McAleese making comments about the unionists at a Holocaust memorial, which caused chaos, that they will still say what they want to say unless it is that address to the nation, address to the Oireachtas. Because look, a lot of the presidents would show up to the opening of a crisp packet. And the problem is they do not have the amount of people in government to be checking every single statement,
they could have three or four engagements in any one day.
And it's probably the same speech that they're using, to be fair, if it's not going to be the same audience. So it is an area that is going to develop with more and more people coming into the office.
So
and when you only have the Constitution saying the hard limits, everything else is on protocol, everything else does get woolly when you're looking at what are the hard limits on an issue.
So, Sean, are you looking forward then to an exciting campaign where, according to your analysis and Jennifer's, they can be pretty broad in the kind of statements they make?
I think that, yeah, exactly. You see, I think having a more explicitly political president that can actually speak about things about which people like vehemently disagree probably brings more rationality to presidential debates. It probably didn't, like, there is a logical problem, I think, in having a big, massive election campaign every 7 or 14 years when, you know, the consequence of this is that you can't say anything about it on anything of any,
But, I mean, the bottom line here, I think, is, Jennifer, they can say a lot more than maybe we thought they could say, but actually under the Constitution, they can do very little. Is that fair, Jennifer?
Yes, because when it comes to the ceremonial roles, the roles with the government, they are pretty much constrained. So one of the problems that when it comes to the campaign is you will have candidates trotting out lines about, I remember from the last presidential election, going, if I don't like legislation, I'm not going to sign it. Now, to be fair to the Irish public, they are pretty clued in. We've plenty of referendums. We know how to look at things, analyse it and make what we feel is the correct decision for the state. But when you have candidates who either recklessly or negligently are saying that they will do X, Y and Z, knowing full well, and maybe it's just the constitution nerds like myself and Sean who are looking at it going, no, you can't do that. Why are you saying that? But they do have to be honest with the people of the limitations of the office and what they can carve out as what they can do within those limitations, instead of saying, I'm going to have a particular focus on X, Y and Z, say something within the purview of the Department of Health. And the Department of Health is scratching their heads going, well, how are they going to do that? Because even if they do want to have, say something very worthwhile about mental health, that's our role as the Department of Health. We are the executive on that. And anything that they're going to say to the nation will be going through the speech beforehand anyway with a red pen. So what's the point?
All right. Jennifer, thank you very much for joining us. Dr. Jennifer Kavanagh, law lecturer at Southeast Technological University and author of Constitutional Law in Ireland. And Sean Rainford, PhD student in Constitutional Law at DCU. Thank you both very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.